Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalypse Podcast. I'm Steve. He is...
Dr. Van Beek.
Dr. Van Beek it is. Yes. Put that up on a billboard, everyone. Good to see you,
Mike. Or on the side of a bus.
Or on the side of a bus. Yes. On your campaign slogans, everyone.
I noticed the people up here, if they're doctors, they actually put doctor in front of their name, which we were taught was quite improper in university circles.
Oh. Yeah, not where I work, because, boy, they love their titles. But hey, you know, why not? You know, you worked, you got, you did, you whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know what? People do, they did work hard. I didn't, because I'm smart.
Take that.
Take that.
Take that,
you. That's better than saying, because I went to a poop institution. Yeah. Actually, I didn't. I went to a very good one.
You went to a good institution.
Though. I did.
But my good friend, we're talking about Acts 21.
Yes.
Yes, it's the 21st chapter of Acts, everyone. All right. So.
And he's on his way to Jerusalem. And there's some big stuff happens here, actually. Not big stuff, but weird stuff happens here. And we'll talk about that.
Okay. Cool. Well, should I just jump
you
in
should, and start reading? You should read, Steve.
Why don't I start reading stuff? Well, and I read stuff. All right, folks. I'll flip it. What the heck? I don't have it on the right version, but can I find it?
Oh, is that the New International?
That's New International.
I want to see something that's New International.
That's New International.
Can you scroll down a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. And no, stop. Oh, maybe it's up a little higher. Go back a bit. I don't know where it is now. That's interesting. Maybe it's not in the international version.
Oh no,
he says something very similar. Okay. I just caught it.
We'll flip it to the ESV. Why not? All right, folks, pick it up. Acts 21, verse 1. I don't think it's messed me up any, but let's see what fun ways I pronounce things this week, shall we? As we all wait on the edge of our seat. Where will he screw this up? Well, I'll tell you where. No. All right, verse 1. And when we had parted from them and set sail, we came by a straight course to Cos, and the next day to Rhodes, and from there to Patara. And having found a ship crossing to Phoenicia, we went aboard and set sail. When we had come in the sight of Cyprus, leaving it on the left, we sailed to Syria and landed at Tyre, for there the ship was to unload its cargo. And having sought out the disciples, we stayed there for 7 days, and through the Spirit, they were telling Paul not to go on to Jerusalem. When our days there were ended, we departed and went on our journey. And they all, with wives and children, accompanied us until we were outside the city. Kneeling down on the beach, we prayed and said farewell to one another. Then we went aboard the ship, and they returned home. When we finished the voyage from Tyre, arrived at...
Oh, no, I would stop there.
Oh, okay, sure.
I think we're good there. So anyway, so basically Paul is now just journeying back to Jerusalem, right?
Right.
So that's kind of obvious. And I don't know why Luke says, leaving it on the left, we sailed to Syria and landed in Tyre. You'd probably have to, you know, maybe if we had a map out, we'd say, well, when you leave Cyprus, this is what you do, you know?
Yeah.
Why he thought that was important to say.
Yeah.
Now, usually we don't talk about that. We just say that, oh, by the way, this is a we portion.
Yeah.
And remember the we portions, when you start saying we, that suggests that, of course, this part of Acts, Luke was there with Paul. That's all it means.
Yeah.
So part of Acts, Luke isn't around, and he's telling you what he's learned from others. And part of it, he was actually right there. And so.
Okay.
So somebody from the area, or maybe from that time period, could have told us the importance of leaving on the left.
But yeah.
That's how you mount a horse, by the way. If you're going to get on a horse, you get on the left.
Okay.
And do you know why you get on a horse on the left?
No, Larry. Why?
Because that's how they're trained.
Maybe that's how the Cretans were trained.
That's right. If you got on the right, then that would be because they were trained that way.
Yeah.
And having sought out the disciples, we stayed 7 days. Now, this is the part that I find really odd. It says, and through the Spirit, they were telling Paul not to go down to Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And then when our days ended, we left accompanied by the children. and we were outside the city. And again, a little bit later on, they're gonna ask him not to go down to Jerusalem. They're gonna plead with him not to go down. But right here it says, through the Spirit they told him not to go down.
Yes, yeah.
And of course, Luke, being the great storyteller that he is, doesn't explain this to us at all. So we have no idea what he's actually saying.
Yeah. And meant something to the audience, but not necessarily to us, removed by centuries.
Maybe, I don't even know if it meant something to them. Did it mean that it was like tongues and interpretation, or it was a prophecy?
Yeah.
But it was actually, and here's the bigger thing. Did the Spirit tell him not to go?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the Spirit they told him. And did he just say, I don't care what the Spirit says?
I'm going.
Yeah. I think more likely, because we can't accept that interpretation, we would have to say probably through the Spirit they were telling him what was going to happen in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. But it's not the way he says it.
No.
And I find that very difficult. I find it difficult that the Spirit could be telling you something that you choose not to do. So you know, because Pentecostals are Spirit people. We're not mystical like Catholics, but you know, which is kind of odd. Yeah.
Right. But it's a very, very odd way for Luke to say it.
It is odd. Yeah. It's odd that the Spirit would tell Paul not to go and then he would go anyway. So then that's why we would assume that it's something else is happening there.
Yeah.
So anyway, they departed on the journey, and with their wives and children, they accompanied us until we're outside the city. Then we knelt on the beach and prayed, and we headed on our way. And now we're into verse 7.
When we had finished the voyage from Tyre, we arrived at Ptolemais, and we greeted the brothers and stayed with them for one day. On the next day, we departed and came to Caesarea. And we entered the house of Philip, the evangelist, who was one of the seven, and stayed with
him. Okay, we got to stop. What are you doing pronouncing all the names right?
I'm sorry.
You're messing with our audience.
I'm sorry. I know we've set a high standard when it comes to my pronunciation of Greek names. But I've decided that there's at least two I know. Yeah. And I'm going to go with it. And run out this ball as far as it goes. All right, so Philip, hey. He had four unmarried daughters who prophesied. While we were staying for many days, a prophet named Agabus, which was one of the best buses I've ever taken in my life. No, I'm just joking. So came down from Judea, and coming to us, he took Paul's belt and bound his own feet and hands and said, "Thus says the Holy Spirit, this is how the Jews at Jerusalem will bind the man who owns this belt and deliver him into the hands of the Gentiles." When we heard this, we and the people there urged him not to go up to Jerusalem. Then Paul answered, "What are you doing, weeping and breaking my heart? For I am ready not only to be imprisoned, but even die in Jerusalem for the name of the Lord Jesus." And since he would not be persuaded, we ceased and said, "Let the will of the Lord be done." After these days, we got ready and went up to Jerusalem. And some of the disciples from Caesarea went with us, bringing us to the house of Mnason of Cyprus, an early disciple with whom we should lodge.
So this time again, it's by the Spirit that Agabus shows him what's going to happen in Jerusalem. So in the other one, they said through the Spirit we were telling him not to go. We might assume that it's the same thing that happened here. Mm. Thus says the Spirit, this is what's going to happen to the man who owns this belt, right?
Yeah.
So they go a little further on their way. They end up at Philip's house. This is Philip. We assume this is Philip from Acts, earlier on in Acts, Acts chapter 8.
Chariot Phillips.
Yeah, Chariots of Fire Phillips.
Not Phillips.
Yeah, who baptized the Ethiopian eunuch.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and he was Philip was also, who was one of the seven, so obviously it is the same one.
Yeah.
Who was one of the seven, the seven disciples, right? From when they chose the seven disciples. So... Not disciples, deacons. I'm sorry.
Deacons. I'm with you.
Yeah. So then this guy named Agabus, who comes down and he takes Paul's belt and ties him up with it and said, "This is what's going to happen to you." Very interesting the way the prophets work, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes these guys, right up in the Old Testament, right up through the New Testament, had very physical ways of showing their prophecies.
Yeah. 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 make it very real to the hearer or seer.
Very real. And it's amazing the way they did it, what they had to say, and how they did stuff. So anyway, so he ties him up, says this is going to happen in Jerusalem. And then he says, then they start to urge him not to go. So all of his friends are urging him not to go. Very much like Peter urging Jesus at one time. Jesus yes. says, get behind me, Satan.
Yep.
And this time they're urging Paul, hey, you made that connection one other time between Paul and Jesus. And anyway, so it's that type of thing. And then Paul says, you know, what are you doing weeping and breaking my heart? I still remember this because when I was studying for it, when I was doing my master's degree, the guy that was reading had an English accent, and I can still hear it.
It only makes sense.
I would do it for you, but I'm completely incapable of doing accent.
Yeah.
So, and Paul says, look, I'm ready to be imprisoned. I'm ready to die when I get to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And then he moves on to Jerusalem then.
Yeah. And his friends say, all right, fine. You know, hey, let the will of the Lord be done.
Did I miss his daughters here? Weren't they in here somewhere?
Yep. Right here. He had four daughters who prophesied.
Oh, they don't mention much about them there, just that he had four unmarried daughters who prophesied. I wanted to see what the NIV said, but the NIV also said four unmarried daughters, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think somewhere it says four virgin daughters in some, and four maiden daughters in some, but usually they just say unmarried daughters.
Yep.
Which we once said that for people in that day, they kind of thought that unmarried and virgin was the same thing.
I get you.
I say that because when they talk about Jesus' birth and they say, and one of them said that, one of the versions said that Mary was an unmarried woman or said that she was a maiden rather than saying she was a virgin. And there was quite an outcry of the fundamentalists about that, saying that they're not saying that she's a virgin. And I said, well, actually, in those days, they kind of thought those were the same thing.
They're synonymous, yeah.
Yes, yeah, yes. Maybe not so much today, but in those days, that was the case.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Picking up at verse 17, folks. When we had come to Jerusalem, the brothers received us gladly. On the following day, Paul went in with us to James, and all the elders were present. After greeting them, he related one by one the things that God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. And when they heard it, they glorified God. And they said to him, you see, brother, how many thousands there are among the Jews who have believed. They are all zealous for the law, and they have been told about you that you teach all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or walk according to our customs. What then is to be done? They will certainly hear that you have come. Do therefore what we tell you. Have four men who are under a vow. Take these men and purify yourself along with them and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads. Thus all will know that there is nothing in what they have heard, they have been told about you, but that you yourself also live in observance of the law. But as for the Gentiles who have believed, we have sent them a letter with our judgment that they should abstain from what has been sacrificed to idols and from blood and from what has been strangled and from sexual immorality. Then Paul took the men, and the next day he purified himself along with them and went into the temple, giving notice when the days of purification would be fulfilled and the offering presented for each one of them.
Right. So really simple, right? James comes back to him and says, look, we've got a lot of Jewish people here, right? And they're very concerned because you've gone to the Gentiles and they think that you've done away with the law of Moses. Which probably is true.
Yes.
You know, that he has been telling them that you don't need to follow the old laws.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't have been saying that to the Jewish people, because I don't think he'd care if they did. But it was what he was saying to the Gentiles. So James just says, let's just do something to appease these people.
Yeah. Right?
So we got four guys, and it sounds like the Nazarite vow again, right? Where you don't cut your hair and you don't drink wine.
Yep.
For a period of time. And he says, so pay their expenses and we'll get their heads shaved, which doesn't sound good.
No, it's like, really? Oh, okay. Yeah, whatever.
These weren't the girls that were, you know, flirting with the German soldiers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, after the war, they shaved their heads. This isn't that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is just the end of a Nazirite vow. So very, very much a Jewish thing. Paul's going to do this. And then James reiterates, but we did what we said we were going to do. And we've told the Gentiles, all that you've got to do is abstain from food sacrificed to idols, abstain from blood, so food cooked in blood. They always said don't cook meat in its own blood.
Yeah.
And from strangled meat, and from sexual immorality, which is kind of weird because three of those things have to do with eating, table manners.
Yeah.
And the last one is probably something you should abstain from, right?
Yeah.
So then Paul does this stuff, and so that they're ready to accept him. Now, it doesn't help him in the end because he still gets into all kinds of trouble. But maybe Luke is just saying, look, Paul is doing everything that's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And now, I was just going to say, Luke doesn't record that Paul actually says, no, that's ridiculous. I'm not doing that. Paul just does it from what we know.
Yeah, the suggestion is that he just went ahead and did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is actually quite a good point. Again, this wouldn't be any kind of a defense of Paul in any kind of a court situation. Hmm. It is Luke saying Paul is doing the right stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Might fit more with the Peter and Paul thing that they had talked about.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, gets down to the temple and they still arrest him, right?
Yeah, here we go. Verse 27, folks. When the 7 days were almost completed, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man who is teaching everyone everywhere against the people and the law and this place. Moreover, he even brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place." For they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian with him in the city, and they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple. When all the city was stirred up and the people ran together, they seized Paul and dragged him out of the temple, and at once the gates were shut. And as they were seeking to kill him, word came to the tribune of the cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. He at once took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. When they saw the tribune and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. When the tribune came up and arrested him and ordered him to be bound with chains, he inquired who he was and what he had done. Some in the crowd were shouting one thing, some another. And as he could not learn the facts because of the uproar, he ordered him to be brought to the barracks. And when he came to the steps, he was actually carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the crowd, for the mob of the people followed, crying out, "Away with him."
Yeah. So basically what the Spirit said through Agabus came true.
Yeah.
Right. You will be bound. And they actually say that. And so the soldiers come and the Jewish people are just going to, they're going to go after him now.
Yep.
And don't forget at this point in time, I think still at this point in time, Jerusalem would have been an imperial state. So that's why you have a squad of soldiers there. That you would have a legion. Would you have a whole legion there? I can't quite remember.
I don't know. I wouldn't know this stuff.
Yeah. Well, they had imperial and senatorial states. So senatorial states were run by a senator, and they were peaceful states. They were subject to Rome, and there was no issue. Jerusalem was always a problem, so you always had your soldiers there.
Right. Right.
And so when the Jews start to fuss up. In the middle of the street like that, the soldiers come right in to calm the crowds and to make sure there's no trouble. And they find out this issue with Paul, and actually they arrest him.
Yeah.
And they take him away, right? Bound with two chains. And just as the prophecy said, you'll be bound in Jerusalem. Now they're actually taking him out to protect him. And it's interesting that they had to carry him. just to get him out of the way, right? With the soldiers around them and the people coming in, it's odd that the soldiers don't do more, but they don't kill anybody, which is unusual.
Yeah,
and they take him away, and then Paul asks to speak to the people, but we want to stop there because actually his conversation when he asked to speak to the people is actually very much a part of the next chapter. It's the first time we've done that, but we're now moving into the next chapter.
Yeah.
The Jewish people, the Jews there want to kill him. Yeah. And there might have been, I don't know how many would remember this far into the future that he was once the Pharisee of Pharisees that was persecuting the Christians, and now he's become one. So of all people, this guy would really upset them.
Yeah, yeah.
However, they probably most of them don't even know that. They just know that there's something going on, and they're part of the crowd.
Yeah.
They're going to be a part of this thing. So.
Yeah. Is this a private fight, or can anyone join in?
Yeah. There, is that Scottish or Irish?
That's the Irish.
Yeah. I know your background is Scottish, so.
Well, a little bit of Northern Irish in there too, right? So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Orangemen too, like the worst kind.
I actually thought orange were Dutch.
No, well, they called the Protestants in Northern Ireland the Orangemen.
Did they?
Yeah, because they held certain beliefs about the Catholics.
Okay, and the greening of Ireland turns out it's quite a political statement.
Yeah.
I remember one of the singers was singing that. I thought it was very nice. And Paul, our friend Paul, had quite a different opinion of that.
Yeah, which he expressed loudly.
Many times.
Yeah, verbally.
So anyway, cool. So let's hold off to the next one. But Paul has come down to Jerusalem now, and just like was prophesied, he's been arrested.
Yeah.
And actually, in the early part, in his original vision, doesn't God tell him that you know he's got to get down to Rome and stuff?
Yep. That's right.
Yeah. So here we go.
It's not a season cliffhanger, but it's darn close. We're leaving you hanging in chapter 21.
Oh, are we not doing this next week?
Oh, no, we're doing this next week. We'll come back next week to complete it, right?
Okay.
It's like the two-part episode of Dallas. Who shot JR?
Boy, that's an old reference. And oddly enough, I remember that.
Yeah, if you get it, you're there with me.
Yeah.
But folks, thank you so much for joining us. We will be back with you, Lord willing, in 7 days' time, and we'll do this again. And we'll pick it up at verse 37 of chapter 21.
And Paul, once again, teaches us that the Spirit, you can have a lot of trouble in this life and still be spiritual.
Yeah. It's not an out.
Now you can say, I didn't mean to throw that in, Steve. You go ahead and end this thing.
It's all good.
End it for us, Steve.
Yeah. We'll see you next time on the Apocalypse Podcast, folks.